Well, we're coming down to the end. And tonight we are speaking of Next week we have Pluto, and then the week after we have the aspects. So we're going to be talking about Neptune tonight. And we've been saying about the octave planets, Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto, that they have a higher level of consciousness and a lower level of consciousness that are distinctly different. It's still the same planet, but there's a sort of like a polarity changeover between the octave on its higher level and it's on its lower level. So let's talk about personification on the lower or phenomenal level first. It's the type you're most likely to run into, and it's the type that is most difficult to talk about because it has to deal with receptivity, and it has to deal with uncontrolled receptivity. It's as if it takes in concepts without even trying to take them in. And such a person is an instrumentalist, not a virtuoso like somebody who plays an instrument extremely well, but somebody who is a very sensitive instrument for everything that comes out of the active spiritual worlds. Now, there's some danger in this personification, because if somebody is responding to this, there's the possibility of being extremely passive and extremely languorous and getting into sort of a funk like a malaise or something of that nature. So this is not one of the more pleasant in its lower side personifications that you can run into. Nonetheless, even in its lower personification, there can be a creative genius. But the creative genius is somehow distorted. The person speaking has Neptune conjoined the ascendant and has a certain amount of creative genius. In his childhood, he was could make the wood box look like it was full of wood with the least amount of pieces of wood possible, not realizing that he'd have to go out to the woodshed and get more anyway. But so it's when Neptune is activated in a genius-like way, things seem to take place effortlessly, whether somebody is making up a fakery or whether they are receptive to other various types of entities. Neptune is the planet of poets, but not all poets are divine creators, and not all of them are masters of creativity. Some just write reactively, those that are responding to the lower side of things. Plato didn't like this in poets, because poets would write poetry about something as if they knew all about it. And what it was is that they were just tuning in, and they were saying what they knew from tuning in, and it gave the appearance that they knew what they were talking about. So in general, the lower personification of Neptune is the personification of sensitivity. Sensitivity to rare things, to subtle things that most people don't pick up at all. Some people think that sensitivity is a good thing. It can be if one is in control of it. Like your eyes, you can be very sensitive, but you can control them. With sensitivity, if you can't control it, you're then subject to whatever moves your sensitivity, whether it happens to be some kind of agency on the other side that is taking over and taking possession of your personality, even of your physical body. it's not such a good thing. Sensitivity is relatively easy to develop. Control is something that's much more difficult to develop. And if a person has developed control, provided that they are not an iron-hard disciplinist, they are someone that can develop the sensitivity quite well. If you're sensitive, you can know of the existence of things. But if you're only sensitive, you don't have the power to do anything about it. And so there's something of a feeling of a psychology that develops in the lower Neptune, if it were purely lower Neptune, that there's a quality of futility about it. It's, you know, like there's a passive belief in a fatalism or something like this that will take over. Even if the knowledge is uncontrolled and it sets itself upon you, it's quite remarkable what the Neptunian kind of experience is like, because the Neptunian experience is out of chaos. And in chaos, everything is present seemingly at the same place at the same time. And so what happens with the Neptune type of intuition is that one makes connections that normally somebody wouldn't make at all. They know that this is associated with this, and you say, where did that come from? You know, you can see this, the place you actively see it again is in poetry. Poets will make connections between things that nobody ever thought of at all. Now, if a person identifies with this, which this speaker did at a younger time in his life, it is identification with being something different, something weird, and something strange. And I had very much that kind of a consciousness, that I wanted to be something different because I just had that feeling about it. Now, sensitivity usually doesn't end with knowledge, because it is more than just knowledge. There is a feeling that goes with it. And with Neptune, those feelings can be quite diverse. First of all, it can be compassionate. If you can identify your consciousness with something else, or if it just happens that you identify your consciousness with something else, it produces a sympathy. And that sympathy can be manipulated. Sometimes the manipulation isn't even intentional. Like, for example, if you're sensitive, extremely sensitive, and you watch somebody take a drag on a cigarette, you feel yourself wanting to take that same kind of drag, even though you're repulsed by smoking and things of that nature. And if somebody can intentionally get your sympathy and can intentionally get your compassion, they can manipulate you, and they can manipulate you terribly. We're talking about beings that control from the other side. Demonic beings, they always tell you, man, I'm a divine being, and I've got this great cosmic message that I have to get to the world, and I need you to be the channel for it. Now, you can't tell the difference, especially if you're so passive that you can't even control your own being. Something can grab you and do whatever it wants with you. So it's a kind of a difficult thing. This personification can, because it offers almost no resistance whatsoever, it has some good sides to it. It's not so likely to be proud in vain. It's very likely to be humble. It's very likely to be meek. Of course, it can produce counterfeits of the same thing. You know, there's unholier than thou, or there is false holiness, and all of those kinds of things. And there can be a lot of not only humility, there can be lack of self-respect if Neptune gets too strong. And there is, if you lack self-respect, you can become degraded. And if you have somebody controlling your consciousness, I knew of one person that had a control and was not always responsive to that control. And that control told the person, I'm going to knock every tooth out of your mouth. And the person had accident after accident after accident, and each time they lost a tooth. I don't think they became completely toothless, but you know, like if somebody says, I need your body, you say, I'm sorry, it belongs to me, it's tailor-made, it is an emanation of my being, it's a temple and I don't want anyone else in that temple. It's not a wise thing. The part of this that can be either negative or positive is this receptivity. Not only can identify consciousness, its consciousness with something else so that it becomes like this, it can take impressions from other things. And when it takes impressions, it becomes extremely imaginative. Neptune is one of the most imaginative planets in the whole spectrum. If you have something like Neptune and the moon together, you have an imagination that, you know, just in a little flit, it changes from this to this to this, and it's quite something. Again, this can be a genius kind of imagination where you can draw together different elements and you can make compositions that no one would ever think of. But on the lower end of things, since we're talking about the lower personification, it often becomes a dreamer or a visionary, somebody who has all kinds of rare ideals and maybe even the intent to put them in practice, but never actually accomplishes them. Now, if this receptive side can in the least be gotten a hold of, you have somebody that can be like an orator or an inspirational speaker or something like that. They can feel impulses from people, or they can feel what people want, and they can verbalize and articulate everything that people want to hear. That's really quite something. Because there's often a lack of gumption in the lower Neptune, this is often the personification that leads to becoming a pipe dreamer. Give me another pipe of opium and let me just lay here and dream. It can certainly be the psychic, and it can be the psychological garbage can. By the psychological garbage can, I mean somebody who's so sensitive, they can just walk along and they can pick up other people, you know, everything that's negative that they're emanating, this person will pick up. And I've even run into people that thought it was their duty to be sort of like psychological street sweepers, to just go along and pick things up. And they felt that this was their position in life. We're dealing with something like this. This is somebody that can allow the physical body to be taken over. And if it is taken over, it is taken over without critical analysis. Because critical analysis is one of the things that is the opposite of the kind of sensitivity that allows somebody to take over the body. If you start asking questions, if you start analyzing and studying things, that sets up an atmosphere that someone who would like to take you over and make you their medium can't deal with at all. So this is one thing. This is where the opposite comes in. Neptune rules Pisces, and Virgo is a very critical analyst. And if you put that in the Virginian consciousness, that has a skeptical edge to it, that a control doesn't care at all. And even if a person is a medium or a psychic or a channeler or something like that, and they're not in control of it, that means it comes and goes. If there isn't some kind of regimen for developing spiritual powers in yourself, it's a rather chancy kind of thing. But if you have given up your self-respect to a large extent and you've abased your personality, it's nothing to fake it. And because you have this great instrumentality, mediums can do all kinds of things. They understand means where they can fake other people. And it is so prevalent that skeptics think that the fake things are the only things that are in reality. So this is a personification that longs for heaven and divinity and is willing to place its entire being in the service of that. And it can be inspired marvelously. Sometimes the desire is personal. Sometimes it's impersonal. But the dreamer of this type wants heaven on earth and doesn't see any reason why it can't have heaven on earth. Now, if you have this kind of hypersensitivity and your soul power is sacrificed or it becomes flaccid or something like that, and you need to go on in the world, it is very tempting to use something to alter your consciousness. Anything from 16 cups of coffee a day to drugs or anything like that. It's the lower Neptune is the side that will sell itself into intoxication, will sell itself into being taken over. And because on the symbol, we don't show it here, because there are points on the trident, what happens is it's like a fish hook. It goes in and it doesn't get out easily. So you can see that what we're talking about here is the addictive personality. And it takes enormous will to overcome addiction because it is there and it tries to insert itself into you. It's a clear fact. We have all the records from the tobacco companies now that they try to addict people. And they put things into cigarettes to make sure that smokers, once they start, say they're smokers. They might even say that they promote quit smoking things because they know they've got them anyway, and the few that do quit. So it can be kind of an insidious thing. Because of the general weakness, there is a tendency to dependency. Even if there is not addiction, there is a tendency to dependency. I remember when I first offered this course many, many years ago, I believe it was 1968 or 69, there was a man that was into all kinds of phenomena. He wasn't interested in meanings, and he wasn't interested in self-development or becoming spiritual or anything like that. And he used to call me up and he said, well, what do you think of so-and-so? What do you think of Arthur Ford? And I said, he's a pitiful medium. And he said, no, he's a powerful medium. And I said, no, you've got it all wrong. If you are a medium, you're more valuable as a medium if you're unpowerful. The less you have of strength and the more you become dependent upon your connection, the more valuable you are to them. Sometimes when we take this combination of sensitivity and weakness, we find someone who gravitates to the darker and the seamier, the underside of society. There's a romantic desire to attach oneself to the lowly as if all of the lowly were great people given a chance, and they probably had many chances, not to be uncompassionate. They would be splendid people. So with this kind of sensitivity is what you find in the realm of spies, intelligence agents, or extraordinary detectives. You know, like everybody wants to solve crimes, and they actually believe that the criminal justice system is just, and that is, I don't want to get into that. But it can get pretty psychically dark. There have been some excellent books, the names of which I can't recall right offhand, showing how the very often the world of espionage. And we're not talking about the upper level CIA agents, but the ones that are the intriguers, that are sort of on the street spies, showing that very often they're addicted, or that they're addicted to wild sex, or that they're henpecked or something like that. And that's very much a Neptunian world. If they're sympathetic and they are extremely sensitive and know that things are going on, they can take care of themselves. They have a really great instinct to keep out of trouble. But such a person, because they have forfeited a lot of their character and a lot of their integrity, is treacherous. So the lower side of Neptune has a treacherousness about it. It's a turncoat kind of thing. Again, it's the mastery of trickery, fakery, fraud, any kind of deception, chicanery, counterfeiting, anything like that. The ability at giving the illusion or the appearance of things can take on various different kinds of forms. In some cases, if someone has this kind of sensitivity, they can do marvelous painting works. Like if you look, for example, at Manet, and you look at some of his paintings, and you get right up close to them, they're just little dots of color. And then you get about 5 or 6 feet back or 10 feet back, and they're miraculous in the atmosphere that they produce. But when you get up, you see that it's all illusion, that it's just little dots of color. And that kind of sensitivity is something that the lower side of Neptune is really good at. Cosmetology is like that, which is a especially devastating form of camouflage. I'm not getting any comments from the back row now. So even if you have slight control of it, it does amazing kinds of things. If it is compassion for the downtrodden, and if it is accompanied with other things, it leads to a kind of divine subjugation. The best example I can think of that is Mother Teresa. And she recognized the value in soul building and in the taking away of pride in humility and in humilification and in suffering. And somebody asked her once, what about all these people in United States and Europe that don't have much suffering in their life? She said something to the effect, they're not very fortunate. You know, it sounds a little bit backwards, but this is the way Neptune works, and it can be really wonderful. Now, Neptune, if it is put together with other planets, can galvanize spiritual energy. For example, Neptune together with Mars leads to a kind of charisma that attracts people, and that attracts the person having that to very unusual kinds of things, macabre things, or intrigue, or things like that, and fabulous notions. So when you're dealing with Neptune, you're dealing with the world of UFOs, and infiltrations, and being captured, and things like that. I don't know whether there are or aren't UFOs. I don't have any final opinion on it, but I do know that there are some people that just, you know, they're intrigued by that. It's, again, something that has to be different. So whether you have a virtuoso who can feel a piece of music exactly as the composer wanted it, or whether you have a fraud, or whether you have someone who is a saint in humility, or whether you have a $5 psychic or something like that, there are always good intuitions. Even when those intuitions are intentionally distorted to mislead. All right, let's turn to the positive side, or the higher side of Neptune. You're less likely to run into the higher side of Neptune. It has many of the same things as the lower side. It has all of that sensitivity, but the sensitivity is something that can be turned on or turned off, and it can be directed as necessary. This is what clairvoyance is. It is an ability to be in control of sensitivity and to go, so to speak, to whatever vibrational level that you need to go to observe things. So all of the sensitivity is present with the higher side of Neptune. But also there is a kind of super intelligence and a super knowledge that goes along with it. And faculties like memories, that a memory that goes beyond personal remembrances, being able to read the memory of nature, being able to draw, you know, like even a physicist will tell you that anything that has ever happened in this room is recorded on the walls of this room, and that if you had a sufficiently sensitive instrument to pick it up, you could pick whatever you wanted up. And of course, with physics, that would be a very hard thing to do. But for someone who is a sensitive, they can pick it right out of the ethers and see everything that has happened. And with the higher side of Neptune, there's not only memory, there is that super imagination again. And it is a super imagination that has galvanized spiritual energy behind it. And by galvanized spiritual energy, we mean the ability to do magic. And instead of just knowing that things are connected together, which it surely does, things that you would never think were related to each other but still can be related to each other, the higher side of Neptune not only can know those things, it can compose in that way. We're talking about a divine faculty here. All of the qualities of the lower Neptune are magnified, except that they are all positive. And they're positive in such a way that the owner of such a Neptune says, this can be done, and creatively finds a way that miracles are accomplishable. Yes? Higher Neptune. Oh, did I say lower? Oh, I'm sorry. The higher Neptune doesn't just have things happen. It knows that things that are spiritual, that things are from the inner worlds, are matters of subtlety. And they realize that one can miss the subtlety. So in this, there is the ability to carefully discriminate one thing from another and to be able to note the very subtle differences. Sometimes there are differences that are intentionally put together, because the higher side isn't all nice either. There are plenty of black magicians just as there are white magicians. And the symbols that are used for black magicians are very similar to the symbols used for white magicians, but there's usually one very little different change in detail which makes it all very different. The higher Neptune is masculine, not receptive even with its sensitivity. It is attunement, and it is attunement through sympathetic vibration-like activity and not just becoming infinitely passive. So there is an assertive attitude in the higher Neptune. The higher Neptune is not afraid to wield power and to wield it generously. So what we're talking about here is a magician or an alchemist or a conjurer or someone who can take things and transform them. Now, when we talked about Uranus last week, we said that the higher side of Uranus was the mystic, will believe anything and who lives in love and is accepting of all. In the same way, the higher octave of Neptune is the occultist. Unfortunately, that word has taken on bad connotations in the last 20 or 30 years. But the occultist is someone who works with invisible forces and realizes that it can get within those forces and that those forces are within itself. And then it can master and control and direct those forces. The thing about Neptune is that it's very different. Its intuition is very different than Uranus. It doesn't come from a deep and high place as the intuition of Uranus comes from. The intuition of Uranus is just you purely know the truth and you follow it. That's the way a mystic does. The way an occultist does it, the Neptunian intuition not only knows that something is true, but why it is true and what you can do about it when you know that truth. It's a much different kind of consciousness. So this is somebody that not only knows what the effect of this color will be in a painting, not only knows that this is the right color to put in the painting, but knows what the effect will be and can produce the kind of effect that it wants to produce. If Neptune is very strong in your chart, it can represent a teacher with a capital T, a spiritual person who is probably as evolved as much above us as we are evolved above a turtle or something like that. Someone who is a hierophant who knows about the laws of nature, and if you are ready, and only if you are ready, can help you to bring those things out of yourself. It can also be a master artist or a master musical composer who knows not only about music but knows about sound and acoustics and knows about aesthetics and knows about psychology. It's that thing that everything gets all connected together. So with the higher Neptune, if you have such a thing really strong in your chart, it is someone or being attracted to someone, if it's not yourself, who has the ability to do a tour de force of everything in a particular subject or in an activity. This is knowledge with a capital K. We have a word that is a slang word in our language, but in Charad's language, it's a high word, and that word is savvy. Neptune has savvy. It has a direct spiritual experience, and with that direct spiritual experience is savvy as to the meaning of things. They even have a high state of consciousness called Savo Kelpa Samadhi, and that's a what we would call the baptism of the Holy Spirit is the same as for them. In some ways it's similar because there are all these connections. Because if you go to somebody speaking in tongues, what will happen? There'll be somebody else interpreting. It's like they're picking up the same stuff and nobody knows what the language is really. I don't know whether that's positive Neptune or negative Neptune or a little bit of each. I've run into both with regard to that. Even when one has a Neptunian experience and it's complete and fully waking experience, only then can one really know what the Neptune experience is like. If you are in a creative state, you can know what that is. And even that is addictive because there are people who are great creators. Entertainers are like that. Even sports people, they get into a clutch situation and they get inspired, and they know they can do things, they can manifest greater strength, or they have an understanding that they don't normally have, but then when they're in their normal everyday life, it isn't there. If you're on stage and everybody's sending all kinds of things to you and you can respond to them, and then you come down and live an ordinary life, It's addicting. It's not surprising that people, great musicians and such like that become addicted to drugs because they want to stay in heaven all the time. And even if they're somewhat in control of it, this still happens. We have this selfishness. And in this selfishness, we actually believe that we deserve to have high lives all the time, which is really a disbelief in spirituality, because if you really were spiritual, you would have a high life all the time. The fact that you aren't indicates that you're not ready for that, and you just better take what is, you know, what's due and what is there for you. So, but it is something like that. There have been times in my life that I've been subject to that kind of addiction. Almost all my addictions, I think, are gone now. It's really wonderful. It's taken a lot of work, but the petty ones and even some of the big ones are all gone. So at any rate, you have someone who has knowledge. A good psychiatrist who can read all sorts of things in your consciousness, and without even being a clairvoyant, can see the different connections and the structure of the workings in your soul, or knows the story of the myth that you're working out, and they can be amazingly intuitive about what it is. And in rare cases, it is a hierophant. But since there aren't initiates running around the street by the dozens, it's a very, very now, this is often a very tricky and difficult personification to work with. Due to our earthbound habit of materialism, the spiritual realms are so subtle and they're so different. And we try to apply what we know here to something that is like that, and it doesn't work. Because everything about the spiritual worlds is foreign. It's exactly the way the Bible says it. My ways are not your ways, or the ways of God are strange to the ways of men. So what happens is that this can be inverted, so that you get things backwards because things in the spiritual worlds are different. I can remember one time having a friend who had semi-waking experiences as an invisible helper when he was out of his body at night with doing healing work and things like that. And he was in a place where there was a teaching going on about what happens, the relationship of astrology and history. And to the it was in the ethers. It was like pictures, right, consolidated in the light and reflecting ethers. And it had the appearance of like being in the war room at the Pentagon, you know, where they had this great big transparent map of the world. And this was a map of the solar system. And it had planets on which had not been discovered at that time. Only this person did not have the full waking control of the consciousness in the inner world, and in the ethers, everything you see backwards. And this person was trying to get the names of trans-Pluto planets off of the board. And he described it as trying to go around to the back side of the board and see it where it wasn't inverted, not realizing that you had to do that in your consciousness. And because if you get around to the back side of the board, it's going to be backwards there too. And that's sort of like why what I'm trying to say? That sometimes you think you understand it, but you've got it exactly opposite of the way it is. And that's something that, why the Neptunian experience is so difficult to deal with. And it's so different that it's shocking what happens. And it's not easy to read these things. You have to be extremely peaceful, and you have to be able to differentiate very, very subtle things. And if you don't, if you get excited, you're lost right then and there. You might still be tuning into things, but you can't be in touch with them. the way things are done is very different than the way things are done here. If I take this mighty strong rostrum and move it, this is a direct movement. But the way Neptune works at its very best is much more indirect. Now, if you like those Hobbit books, there's something very accurate in those Hobbit books. And that is, things happen when Gandalf is around. It's as if everything, the whole of the world's come alive, and people start getting inspirations. They think things they've never thought before. They get the courage of conviction to do something they've never done before. And that is the indirect kind of way that the mastery of Neptune works. Tolkien must have been very sensitive to be able to have put that in words in that way, to what they maybe even had conscious experience that way. I don't know. But things are, to us, weird and bizarre, and uncanny things happen. There are the famous cases where Freud and Jung were sitting at a kitchen table, and they were talking about something, and one of them averred that he didn't believe psychic phenomena were true, and then a dish up in the cupboard cracked right before them, and Freud hyperventilated. He couldn't handle it. He hyperventilated several times in life, and almost every time he hyperventilated, the subject had to do with death. So you don't do things with spiritual things, you know, like you do them by uniting ideals and principles, and miracles, so to speak, come out of the consolidation of the union of higher principles and imagination, and things become manifest. You don't change things like you take a saw and saw a piece of wood or something like that. Again, this personification, the higher octave personification of Neptune, is for the most part usually positive, but there can be negative sides to it. There can be beings who are sorcerers or witches or things like that who have developed certain powers and have developed certain sensitivities, but have not developed the morality that goes with it. We said that Uranus dealt with altruistic or divine love, and when that gets perverted, it gets perverted so that human affections get turned around. Well, when the Neptunian qualities get perverted and there are no values, it is might makes right, let me go ahead and do this because I have the spiritual know-how, irrespective of still having selfishness. Usually this kind of psychology that is a higher perverted Neptune is a little bit twisted and it's inverted, and it is often distracted and carried away with darkness, and it even identifies with evil, as evil is strange or weird or something like that. Rather than taking inspiration and having divine enthusiasm, which are aspects of the positive side of the higher Neptune, this is anything that is excited. This is a little bit ghoulish, drug experiences and like that. See, this is one of those inversions that's especially funny, because if you look into it, there's absolutely no rational reason for black magic. It's stupid. The consequences are stupid. The long-term relationship to human evolution, it's all stupid. But, you know, if you get involved and hooked into the spiritual phenomena, that sort of thing happens. I'm going awfully slow here. The symbol of Neptune, we have two here. The one on your left is called the receptive cup. It is not used much in horoscopes. It is a semicircle on top of a cross. And this is often used in horary or things like that. and it has to do with accepting things into yourself without question. It's a kind of divine obedience. The second symbol is the trident. It is each of the tines on the trident relates to one of the aspects of the threefold spirit. The human spirit, which is the lowest, or you might say, I don't like using those words, but it is the lowest of the three attributes of the spirit. In fact, it is in Hindu astrology, the trident is sacred to Shiv, and Shiv is the third in that trinity. It works out, it's cross-cultural. The receptive cup is like those people who go like this in a prayer meeting. They're trying to receive, or they're trying to draw into themselves, rather than being in a prayer meeting trying to give, you know, or trying to be in control or do something of that nature. The common symbol of Neptune, if you look at it, in reality, it is two crosses. One where the semicircle crosses the vertical staff and the regular. And that is a very excellent symbol because it shows the double cross. And Neptune is the planet that is most likely to double cross, especially if it's in aspect with Saturn, and especially if it is in a malefic aspect with Saturn, that it is likely to double cross. If you take something and turn it over and turn it over again, you have something that is a twice removed illusion. And that's the kind of thing that Neptune likes. It likes losing people in very complex systems. Thimble rigging is a Neptune thing. The shell game where you just move things all around like that, that's very much a Neptune thing. And that has all kinds of crosses and such in it. You know, I've gone, once a year I go to a baseball game at the Chicago White Sox, and they do the thimble rigging on that big screen. And do you know that a lot of people get that? They get it right, and they get it right every time. They've gotten the secret. They are not distracted by any of the other motions. They keep their eye only on one cup that had the one that has the ball under it, and they don't care what happens to the other cups. And that's a perfect example of using a concentration and a singularity of purpose to get around all kinds of devious double crosses of Neptune. Trident is a useful object. And Neptune, even as idealistic as it is utilitarian. And the trident is something that works both as a spear as well as a fork. And Neptune is extremely projective. It has, this is of all things, this is the psi in psychic phenomena. There is a left wing, a right wing, and the middle way. And that is very much what you can do with Neptune. You can take the right-hand path, the left-hand path, or you can remain completely neutral. Buddhists, of course, would stay with the central path and always be neutral. Classical way of looking at it is at the is as the trident of Neptune, who the Greeks knew as Poseidon. The trident fork shows the unified functioning of all three attributes of the spirit working together. The higher will and the higher imagination get unified with the direction of action and things are accomplished. They all work together. So this is a penetrating, a projectile that pierces through anything. The barbs indicate the trapdoor effect of Neptune. Consciousness is irreversible. History is irreversible. up till the moment that something is turned into an event, you can always change things. But when a cause culminates in event, you can't go back. It is fixed. And that's sort of the way Neptune is. It indicates both its habituation, but it is definitive in what it does. If it were all in spirit and never definitively defined or never brought to some kind of active experience, it would never be finished. And Neptune is the finisher. In mythology, in Greco-Roman mythology, the Greeks called it Poseidon, and of course the Romans called it Neptune. In Greek, it means he who gives drink from the wooded mountain. The mountain is usually the high place. The wood is usually a chaos, such as the Forest of Eden, for example, in the Tales of Orlando. And the drink is a flowing kind of inspiration. And this literally is a very descriptive name. It's a high place that is very chaotic, and in that there is a clear stream of consciousness. When we're talking about like Virginia Woolf literature or something of that nature, where you're talking about stream of consciousness, you're talking about Neptunian consciousness. It seems awfully complex, but it's, if you follow the stream of consciousness, it's very simple. It gets somewhere. Poseidon among the Greeks was also called the shaker of the earth. Was responsible for earthquakes, but it also has something to do with the fact that what Neptune accomplishes things by is a principle of frequency, of sympathetic vibration, and by vibratory capacity is the way that most magical things are accomplished. Poseidon was an elder god, not a titan, but a brother to that generation. The three brothers were Zeus, Poseidon, and Hades. Zeus ruled the higher world, the heavens. Hades ruled the underworld, or the invisible lower world that was filled with the power to kill. Poseidon ruled the sea. And the sea is an undifferentiated chaos of life. Everything is born out of that atmosphere of the sea. Neptune at one time did try to dethrone his brother Zeus. He tried to do it by treachery, but he was unsuccessful. The thing about Poseidon is that he was extremely ugly, ugly to being repugnant in his appearance. And this is, again, that same thing we saw with Pisces or Pisces. It is something is so ugly, it's beautiful. And it is seeing, you know, the negative and realizing what the positive is like through the negative. That's a principle that works with Neptune in many, many different ways. And it is most common in one of the things that was ruled by Neptune. Poseidon maintained culture by maintaining the masks of comedy and of tragedy. Because the third aspect of the threefold spirit is where the creation of selves is, where there is a creation of character. And if someone is a playwright, they are producing a logical and consistent character. And so this is obviously ruled by Neptune. Now, before I get too lost here, but things seen there are inverted from the way they are here, and so things appear ugly, things that are really quite beautiful. And there's also a psychological thing that boy, how does there a bunch of things I want to say all at the same time? And I'm sort of, it's like everybody heading for the door and getting to the door jam at the same time and not being able to get through. It makes for us not realizing that the highest spiritual things as seen in this material world cannot be seen directly. They have to be seen invertedly. This is why the most spiritual of all the dramas are tragedies and not comedies, because comedies have a quality of being so trite and are so simple, simplistically easy, that we can't see the real depth of meaning to them. Probably the greatest tragedy of all we just celebrated. Jesus lived a perfect life, at least during the 3 years ministry that Christ was in that body, and was falsely accused. And here a perfectly beautiful person is put to death as a criminal, as an inciter. And that, if you look at that, that looks like a horrible thing. But if you look at how the meanness of humanity writes its own death warrant by killing someone that's innocent, they have accepted something that's innocent into their midst, and it will eventually overcome all of that meanness and nastiness. And if you think about that, then the tragedy of the story of Christ is actually a quite high thing. Oh, let's see. Am I in tune enough that I can bring out something else? Things aren't what they seem to be. This is a theme that's common in a lot of fairy tales. The princess, the princess chooses the wrong guy because she chooses the guy that's pretty, whereas the best candidate is the one that is the best looking, is the ugliest looking, and turns out to be such. I'm thinking about the myth. Are you familiar with the myth of King Hawkbeak, which is especially dear to me? Enough of that. He's one of the only gods that couldn't get Aphrodite into bed. He tried, and he tried very, very hard, but he couldn't make it. And he does get a wife. Her name is, boy, I don't know if I... Amphrite. I don't know if that's the proper pronunciation. And he has three children, Triton, Rhod, and Benthicame. He has various lovers. He has a gloomy disposition. This is one of those things, again, if you seek heaven, the brighter the light, the darker the shadow. And so that seeking of higher things is going to lead to a deeper depression or going into the material world. He was always strange, and he was always otherworldly, seemingly distorted. That's what the sea is like. Things get bent and twisted and distorted when you see them through water. He ruled floods, sea disasters, and sometimes all disasters. He was weirdly jealous to a very great extreme and excessively dramatic. And those are things that describe, if you have a Neptunian instrumentalist actor, you've got somebody that can really do all of those things. He was the creator of the horse, which probably has something to do with the self. That's probably quite symbolic. Together with Mercury, or Hermes, his lower octave, Poseidon rules the mysteries and the mystery schools. If you go through the stories, he performs many more metamorphoses and transformations than any of the others. All right. Here we are at planetary figures. Every person in your life represents one or more planets, especially the people who are really important in your life. Your partner, your children, your parents, the people who have really strong effect on you and you on them. And every planet in your horoscope represents one or more people. Who are your Neptune people? Some likelihoods are inspirers. People who inspire us, whether they intend to do so or not. I've seen a lot of instances in the last 40 years of two people will be having a conversation about something very lofty and spiritual, and somebody on the other side of the room will just pick up something here or there, and it wasn't even intended for that person, and they get inspired by it, and it's a changing kind of experience. I've seen that several times. Sometimes the best times the person inspires you by the quality of their life. That is to say, not even the things that they do, but the life that they put into what they do. Probably one of the greatest magicians of all times was a Neo-Pythagorean called Apollonius of Tyana. And the Neo-Pythagoreans had to have a five-year period of silence before they could speak. He was doing miracles even during that five-year period of silence. And somebody once asked him, by what knowledge do you do your miracles? And his answer was, I do not do miracles by knowledge, but by the purity of my life. So such a person who has that kind of inspirational ability. Sometimes there are miracles or psychic phenomena. There's the famous story of Madame Blavatsky, who was being interviewed by a man, and he said he asked her to produce some magical phenomena for which she was famous. And she said, I don't want to get into doing magical phenomena. And he goaded her and said snide things and things like that. And he was drinking. He had a wine glass there, and he picked up the wine glass and was going to drink, and it shattered in his hand. And she looked at him and said, I never could stand a man who drank too much. And he said, do it again. If you do it again, I'll proclaim you as a master magician. And if you don't do it, I'll just tell the world that you're a fraud. And she said, I'm not going to be blackmailed. He said, what I do is I attract people by moral character. And he insisted, and she says, I'm not going to do it that way. And so the conversation goes on later on. He picks a more solid glass, thinking that it's all over, and he brings up the glass, and she shatters it right, and his lip gets cut. And she just smiled at him, and that was it all. There's something, a person who is this inspiration that always has something intangible and something that you can't explain, and that sometimes it's really wonderful. We have a very sweet little, on Sunday nights we have a healing prayer group that meets here in this room, and there's one sweet little old lady. And when she's there, everybody feels better. And it's that magical power that she radiates. You know, and she has terribly hard conditions to deal with in life. She lived her whole life with an alcoholic husband. That boy was a really tough person. But she always comes out smelling like roses. She's, and she doesn't think anything of it. She's completely humbled. She doesn't have all those shields of ego in there that keep the light from penetrating. And just, she's got really hard things to deal with right now. But she says, well, we just got these things we have to do. And she says, it's so simple. And she wears like shoes like a little child, you know, colored shoes and striped stocking. You can't help but to love her. And to me, she's an inspiration because she's got tough stuff that I wouldn't want to deal with. And she lives with it all day long. And she does well. Another type of planetary figure can be the confuser. Where Neptune is, there's always likely to be mix-ups or confusion. Nothing is ever straightforward. Part of it is because when Neptune is around, you do things in a very complex way and not straightforward. And if you're sensitive and there are the wrong kind of people around, there are all kinds of distractions. And when those distractions set in, you know, things get confused. Especially when people are operating on different levels of meanings. And then, you know, you're saying one thing and somebody's picking up that it means something else and all of those kinds of things. I happen to run into very often, I have a moon opposite Neptune. And I run into women that shoot from the unconscious, and they don't even know that they're doing it. They literally pull the pistol out of the holster, they shoot from the unconscious, and I pick it up, and it's all confusion after that. I had a friend that had Neptune in the 10th house, and that is confusions of honor. And somebody invited him to go along to this semi-secret kind of society. And there were two men there with the same name. And he got initiated into the society. He got the wrong guy. Imaginary figures. They may be imaginary and they may be the other world. Can be either way. Often it's children that have imaginary figures in their life. They're not imaginary for children because very often they have friends. I had a little friend that when I was a child, my memory is now that I don't know whether I actually saw him or whether there was an active imagination on my part. But I called him Gujibred Boy. And my brother is an extreme rationalist. And he and his friends did everything they could to, in effigy, in reality, to burn up Gujibred Boy, but they could never get him. It was that kind of a thing. He was there. People who are composers, who draw things together from all sorts of disparate sources, they can get this and this and this and they make sense. There's a genius because they can set the spirit of the whole on all these various different things. They have an amazing kind of clarity. The Neptune consciousness, when it is of the higher variety and is positive, it is quite something. I lived for several years with a composer of music. He was really a Neptune. He was the ultimate Neptune person of my life. It was through him that I got interested in these kinds of things. But he, if you ever get a book of Endrickean types, he had a face like an Elizabethan poet. And in the Endrickean type books, it was a pineal type face. And he was weird, really weird. Beautiful music, five-part polyphony. He would sing four parts on a guitar. He would play four parts on a guitar. He would have, what do they call that when you have broken lines of melody? You'd play some on one and then on another, and it gave you the effect of you were hearing four different streams running at the same time, and he was singing the fifth part. And it was amazingly beautiful. And then he'd take it and throw it away and light a fire with it if he needed to. He was a completely unpossessive type of person. I've seen him spontaneously pick up books of poetry and sing the poetry, having never seen the poetry before, play the guitar and sing the poetry, but I've also seen him do all kinds of other weird shit too. He got cold one time, and he said, "I'm going to do what I saw in a book on medieval stuff or something like that." And he had two sweaters. He took one of the sweaters, he put his legs through the sweater and kept himself warm, put the other sweater on and kept himself warm that way. He had psychic abilities. He could take a plumb bob and he could move it in figure eights, or he could move it in things like that. He had done a lot of work, and he had Sun and Mercury trine to Saturn, trine to Neptune in a grand trine. And when he played music, all the rest of his life he was utterly stupid. When he was a child, they wouldn't teach him in school. The only thing he liked was reading aloud. So they took him out of school and he asked for a guitar. And the first thing when he got the guitar, he would beat it. He just listened to the sounds of it. And then he got so that he played with $10,000 lutes for Shakespeare Festival in Stratford-on-Avon is that up in Vermont or is that Connecticut? Stratford, Connecticut, I believe it is. But he was just amazing. But when he played, the music was so thick in the air that, almost you felt like you could cut it. It was like an atmosphere that was thick like the sea. But alas, he liked to get to those realms by drugs, and he eventually went insane, and I traced him through an insane asylum and out the other end into a halfway house, and I could never get, I wanted, because he was one of the dearest people in my life. People who are contact people to you. It could be a medium, it could even be a medium's guide. It's people who get you in touch with the other side. It could be a weird astrologer or somebody like that. Anybody who comes to a class like this, I'm your Neptune person, I'm your contact. I had a friend at one time that he said, I was working in a retreat center and he came there and worked also. And he says, "You know, I came here straight from the 12th house." He was a really interesting guy. He would leave and he'd say, "I have to go downtown. I have to meet my Neptune man." he was quite, I've never seen him ever since those days. Now, wow, that's 40-some years ago. He got himself into all kinds of trouble. He knew charismatically. One of his magics was he knew how to manipulate women to love him. And he would get all sorts of favors, and not just carnal favors, but other favors. And he would manipulate. He has a Neptunian manipulator. There was this woman there, a big, tall, blonde woman that looked like a Valkyrie or something like that. And in the chapel, they would sing. She liked to do solos. And they would get together, and they would sing together. They would do duets. He had a lovely voice, had a wonderful baritone. And they would be getting together, and he'd say, "What do you think about this piece of music? How do you like this song?" He said, "Well, I don't know. I don't think that my voice would be too good for that one." I mean, that's the one he really wanted. And when she heard that, "I want that one." He used that reverse psychology, that inversion again, the Neptune kind of thing. Quite something. If you have a psychologist or a counselor or a psychiatrist or someone like that, someone who can read the mysteries of your soul and understand the full language of symbols, that is a Neptune person to you. Someone who can put you in touch with things that you don't see, that have been invisible to you, that have been there all along, but you never saw them. and someone that has an idea of how we function inwardly. All of the psychological machinations and things like that. I have Neptune conjoined the Ascendant, and this next one is the kind of personification that I have plenty of. Crazies. Those are people who have ruptured or stretched the connection between the spirit and the physical personality. They can't connect with this world, and they can't take this world and bring it back as it is into the spirit. They're not just out of the norm, they're damaged people. And I guess I can tell the story. There's one that's especially, it's been coming around here for quite a few years. And he has this thing that he gets fixated on women. And he was fixated on a barmaid in one of the campus bars. And he kept telling her all these stories about what famous pairs they were in past lives. And they had to have been very busy because they would have had to have been living three places at the same time. And he got fixated on her. And it happened, as often happens, she put a warrant against him, you know, like, what do they call those? Restraining order. And he eventually, or at least so a psychiatrist has told me, one of the psychiatrists, I believe he murdered one or both of his parents, but it was manslaughter, and he served his time under lock and key across the lake. And I used to go there and visit him. And a man is, he wrote a 1,000-page novel about his experiences with the UFO people. And if you write 1,000 pages of anything, it's quite something. But he gets out, and one of the first places is he comes here. And I know his, I have seen his horoscope, and I know what goes on his soul, and I know what's good for him, which is the last thing he wants to hear. So I know how to get him angry, which is kind of a dicey matter if you're dealing with somebody that's homicidal. But he's very, very delusional, and he thinks that he's the rebirth of King Arthur. And he has as much, he has the double Neptune thing. He loves me, and he hates me at the same time. And he has enormous respect for me. And so he tries to co-opt me into his delusion. And so he comes out in the store, and he's talking, and he says, "Do you remember when you were Merlin?" And I said, "No, I don't think I was Merlin. If I were Merlin, I'd probably be something great in the world and not just another guy on a bookstore on Lakeside Street." And so he continues on and continues on, and he can't co-opt me into his delusion. And he's frustrated at this point. And so he quotes a psalm. And he says, "Well, you think the psalm means this, don't you?" And I says, "I don't know. I've never thought about it." "Well," he says, "you know it means this, don't you?" I said, "I don't know if I've even ever read that psalm before. How can I tell you that I believe something if I don't know it?" He said, "You know," and he keeps pushing, and he says, "I don't know." And he looks at me and he says, "Well, you're supposed to know everything." And he pushes one more time. And he said, "You think this psalm means this, don't you?" I said, "I don't know." And he's up and out the door. And it was one of those things that you have a line that you could have used once in your lifetime that you never, you know, you may never get a chance to do it again. What I really should have said to him was, "You're not listening to me, and you didn't listen to me when you were Arthur either." Magicians. If you're fortunate enough to know a great magician or a great healer or something like that, that is a Neptune person. Somebody who can really make changes in the world. Because because they function from the realm of causes and not from the realm of effects. Not from the outer busy work, but from the inner source kind of consciousness. Oh my goodness, we have to hurry if we want to get this in 90 minutes. Colors. It's very hard to associate colors with Neptune. Full spectra are ruled by Neptune. Opalescence, or that pearly quality, is ruled by Neptune. Any kind of diffraction or diffraction grating, and crystals, paisleys and intricate weaves. In Persia, the mystics were weavers, and they worked intricate things into their weaving, and their whole consciousness was had to do with that. They worked from the backside, which means they never saw the pictures that they were creating, but they saw the reverse of them, which is a tremendously Neptunian thing. Elements, some people say the element Neptunium, but I do not know. I can't say. I don't have any thoughts about it. All of the things having to do with Neptune are things that are alchemical, like azoth, the power to transform everything. The three parts of the spine were sulfur, salt, mercury, azoth. Alkahists, or mensurum natural, that is something that will dissolve anything. Alchemical oils, panaceas are Neptunian. Trees, plants, herbs, and foods, mistletoe. It's a true parasite, and it's a magical plant. Sir James Fraser talks about golden bough being the thing that someone carried in their pocket, carried into the inner worlds. That was their passage into the inner world. It was psychedelic, is psychedelic. In fact, it used to be, they used to make handles out of knives for epileptics. And if they felt unusual, they were supposed to grab the handle of the knife because the essence that was in the mistletoe would calm them down. Anything that's hallucinogenic, all of the opiates, mushrooms, marijuana, LSD, even some of the sedatives, but that's shared with Saturn. All of our modern medicine is Neptunian. They're chemical drugs, and therefore they're foreign substances. Anything that's foreign to us is Neptunian. All of modern medicine is, at best, an alterative. At worst, it's poison. All addictive drugs, for certain, alcohol is ruled by Neptune. Together with Mars, especially, all poisons are ruled by Neptunes. And to some extent, homeopathic potencies. There is no emissary for Neptune as far as the planetary emissary is concerned. The whole planet is the emissary. It is the planet that rules composers of music and musicians of stringed instruments and astrologers. Physiologically, it rules the pineal gland, which is responsible for seership and for hot and cold sensitivity. It rules the auditory nerve, so that people with Neptune conjoined the ascendant, for example, can hear things that other people cannot hear. I used to be able to do things like that, but I have destroyed my ears to some extent. All the things of Pisces, such as the feet and the resistance and things like that, are ruled by Neptune. In the special categories, it is an octave. It is a transcendental or spiritual planet. It is the crystallizer of things from the transcendent spiritual worlds. it is a spiritual dynamic, whereas on the physical, it's very lethargic. It's a generational planet in that it takes 14 years to go through a sign. It is the planetary opposite of Uranus, so that if you have an afflicted Uranus with no help from any outside aspects, Neptune is what is to be applied to it. Which means to say, if you have an acceptance of everything and you need to have spiritual knowledge to go along with your acceptance, you apply Neptune to that kind of consciousness. It's a nocturnal planet. Obviously, it's a superior planet. Physically, it's feminine. Spiritually, it's masculine. And for most people, it's malefic. And that very special character of it, it is a visitor. In octavation, Mercury is the lower octave, Neptune is the higher octave. Mercury rules delineatory reason and logic. Neptune rules total comprehension and a kind of super logic. Mercury likes mental arrangement. Neptune likes chaos. Mercury is the brain memory. Neptune is the memory of nature. Mercury makes tools. Neptune is instrumental without tools. Mercury likes short trips. Neptune likes soul flights. It's an aspect of Neptune that you'll probably have your first out-of-the-body soul flight. Mercury prevaricates. Neptune deceives. Mercury communicates. Neptune telepathizes. One way or the other. You know, there are two kinds of telepathy. One is spiritually ethical, one is not. Concrete mind is ruled by Mercury. The spiritual conceptualization is ruled by Neptune. Mercury is neutral or colorless. Neptune is all colored. Mercury is hasty, and Neptune is either indolent or instant. Neptune co-rules Pisces with Jupiter. This means that anything that is in Pisces will affect Neptune, and anything that happens to Neptune will affect Pisces. Suppose Neptune is on the 10th house. It would indicate some kind of odd profession. Could be a distiller, could be a musical composer, something like that. If Neptune would be in the second house, then that would indicate that strange objects that had symbolic value would be the way the success of the profession was seen. If Neptune was in the third house, it would mean that the ability to communicate unusual things or to charismatically move people in sales would be a way a person would be professionally successful. It's that both two-way connection. Neptune has its detriment in Virgo because it is too fussy, and it's got to be just exactly this way, and it's all delineatory. It's exalted in Cancer. If you have one drop, you have the entire ocean, is the phenomenon of Neptune in Cancer. It has its fall in Capricorn, and that is sort of like desalination. Like the water that Neptune needs and likes is taken away, and all of the reagents are left behind in a clump, and they just crumble and fall apart. It works much better in solution if it's dissolved. In the east, that is anywhere in the first house and halfway up into the 12th house, but especially conjoined the ascendant. Very often it's weird eyes, those eyes that you think can see right through you, and sometimes they can. also the tendency to do weird things to the eyes, like wear sunglasses all the time or to wear contact lenses that change the color of your eyes. Moved by beauty or moved by ugliness. I know of one chap that likes only very ugly women. Strange. Very often in the face there are deep, deep lines. If Neptune is in the east, sometimes the person tends toward hypochondria or other psychosomatic conditions. They're certainly hypersensitive, and sometimes the hypersensitivity is allergies. Neptune in the east can produce very ugly people. Sometimes the features seem very sad and very teary, and sometimes extremely slender people. And Neptune in the east, especially in the first half of life, people are very hot or cold sensitive. And Neptune in the east very frequently means undiagnosable or very difficult to diagnose illnesses, misdiagnoses. I have Neptune conjoined the ascendant, and I had pneumonia, and they were going to cut my appendix out. And this is when penicillin first was discovered, and they discovered the pneumonia way too late, and I almost died. And I was taking penicillin shots several times an hour, and it was really quite unusual. I used to be able to run unstoppably before that, and after that, it was never the same. Extreme idealism. If it's in a male, it is sometimes those real long, stringy kind of beards that they like to wear. And women, it's sometimes odd, weird hairdos. The face often has a quality of melancholy about it. And especially in childhood, they are extremely shy. That's it. Well, if you're the sun in Aries, what do you expect? You
little compensation for the Neptunian.
Yeah.
Introversion there.
That's just in the first house.